How do we know there is a God? Well, we can see God's beautiful world and life about us and know that God made that by natural revelation. When I was at the airport down in Birmingham, Alabama, I was standing in line to get on the plane standing next to me was Tina Unlop, who is a member of the church at Fultondale Church of Christ. He has a PhD in biochemistry, and he had given a class to some preachers about intelligent design. And he said that his research on living things has strengthened his faith in the power of God in design. And he said that it's impossible for life to spontaneously arise as is commonly taught in all biology textbooks. He says, not a chance. Well, so we can know that there is a God looking at intelligent design, but what does God want from me? That's the idea of special revelation, that God wants us to develop faith. And we read about Jacob in the Bible, Jacob's faith in God at the end of his life. Here's enshrined in Hebrews chapter 11. Let's read that together. Here's Faith's Hall of Fame. To make it into Faith's Hall of Fame is pretty good. There's a lot of people who are not here. What is interesting about Jacob, and I will point out later, that Jacob is one of three people that he's commended twice, not just once, but twice for his faith. But Hebrews 11, 21, by faith, Jacob, as he was dying, this would be close to, he died at 147 years old in Egypt, made mention, as he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, that's Ephraim and Manasseh, and worshiped leaning on the top of his staff. And that's a reference back over to Genesis chapter 48 about he, by faith, foresaw that they were going to go from Egypt to the land of promise and they were going to be a fruitful nation. And that was going to be something that would be fulfilled beyond his lifetime. And he believed that by faith because God had kept his promises and had taken care of him in his life. And that name, Jacob, though, tells us of Jacob's kind of questionable or spotty past. The word Jacob means supplanter. Supplanter has nothing to do with planting peanuts or anything like that. Supplanting means to take another's place by cunning, which is a nice way of saying, as we remember in the Genesis account, that he was a deceiver, a schemer, and a lying con man. He was kind of a rascal. What is he doing in Faith's Hall of Fame? Every person is a story. Someone has said that there is enough information, there's enough interesting information in every person's life to make some kind of novel out of that. The life of every person is a story, and we write that story day by day, week by week, by the thoughts we think, the words we say, and the deeds that we do. And someone said the Bible is the supreme book of human personality. Men wonder all over the earth to marvel at God's physical creation, but the greatest wonder is man as God's spiritual creation, that we have vast potential for good as well as for evil. Jacob began as a selfish manipulator, but he ended up as Israel, a faithful man of God. And that's a picture depicting his struggle with the angel there of God in Genesis chapter 32. The word there, Israel, is one who struggles or strives with God. And in his struggle with God, he learned to have total faith, total dependence, and total surrender to God. And read with me here, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 9. By faith, he lived, that's Abraham, lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with, now here's when I said Jacob was mentioned twice, commended for his faith, with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. Now notice the context in verse 13. And all these died in faith, all that he had mentioned, including Jacob, without receiving the promises, but having seen them and welcomed them, from a distance, and having confessed they were strangers and exiles on the earth. And so what we see about Jacob is he was a man of faith. He went from dirty tricks to devoted trust in God. And the good news of the Bible is that by faith, people can change. My sister is a nurse at Vanderbilt Hospital, and several years ago, my former sixth grade teacher was a patient in the hospital. And my sister also had Mrs. Pettis as a sixth grade teacher, and she asked how I was doing and what happened to me. And she said, "Oh, Frank is a preacher." And she said, "Mrs. Pettis almost fell out of bed." You've got to be kidding me. Because at that time, let's just say I was hyper. Okay, that was Frank, sit still. Frank, be quiet. Frank, sit down. I was just eating up with energy. At least that was my excuse, you know. And so she just thought that was quite amazing. I'm going to have to come hear him preach sometime. The good news of the Bible is that people can change. Let's look at Jacob's home life. Jacob came out of a dysfunctional family. I want you to read with me here in Genesis chapter 25. And when I use the word dysfunctional, it doesn't mean they were totally haywire and they were totally messed up. As imperfect, sinful human beings, we have flaws. And we're going to see that. The Bible is like a keyhole into the home and the life of different people in the Bible. Genesis chapter 25, verse 27, when the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter and a man of the field, but Jacob was a peaceful man living in tents. Remember, he was domestic. Now, Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game, which is very selfish to show that kind of favoritism. But Rebekah loved Jacob. So they played favorites for selfish reasons. Favoritism obviously can hurt children. When I went to Ethiopia in the year 2000, my first trip there, when I flew into Amsterdam, Holland, I sent three postcards to my daughters. And 2 weeks later, I returned home. The day I returned home from Ethiopia, the postcards arrived from Holland. Well, only two of them did. Lily, who was seven at the time, did not get hers. And she ran upstairs crying, saying, "I didn't love her." Her postcard came the next day. But the idea is that our influence can affect children, particularly favoritism. Now, I'm sure you've seen that in families. So parents have to be careful about our relationship with our children. So Isaac favored Esau because he liked wild game. Rebekah favored Jacob because he was domestic. And then we see Esau, who cared little for his spiritual privilege and responsibility of being the firstborn, because we're going to see that he despised his birthright. And we're going to see Jacob was a selfish schemer. Now, what was his selfish scheming? Here in Genesis chapter 25 and verse 29, it says Jacob had cooked some stew, and Esau came in from the field and was famished. And Esau said to Jacob, "Please give me a swallow of that red stuff there, for I am famished." In verse 31, but Jacob said, "First sell me your birthright." Now get the picture. Let's just say you had two brothers, and one comes in, they're cutting the yard, and he's hot, and he's dehydrated, and he's about to have a sunstroke. And someone, "Can I have a drink of water?" "Sure, for $5, you know. And that, you'd say, "Well, man, that's just really trying to take advantage of the other. Why would you want to do that to your brother?" Well, because Jacob was a selfish schemer. Out of selfishness, Calvinism falsely teaches that people can't help the way they are, that we are born depraved. And the Bible does not teach that. The Bible says, Ecclesiastes, God made man upright, but he has chosen or sought out many other devices. So we develop a sinful nature by wrong choices. And really, we all have to deal with selfishness, do we not? And Jacob's going to have to learn how to grow and overcome his selfishness. He's looking out for number one. So Esau said, "I'm about to die, and what use then is the birthright to me?" And Jacob said, "First swear to me." So he swore to him. So Jacob's covering all his bases and sold his birthright to Jacob And Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and arose and went to his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Hebrews 12 says that Esau was a profane man. Esau doesn't appear to be a bad person. He was just an unspiritual person. He just didn't care about spiritual things. Therefore, he was unfit for spiritual blessings. Jacob was selfish, but he had spiritual potential that God was going to work with him to help him to overcome. Now, what was his dirty tricks there in Genesis chapter 27? Rebekah, and we'll have to hurriedly go over the story, and it's familiar to most of you, I'm sure. Rebekah overhears Isaac saying that he is going to give the blessing to Esau, and he wanted Esau to go to get some game and prepare this favorite meal that he liked, and then he would bless him. And so Rebekah then tells Jacob is a mama's boy, to go to get this animal from the flock, and she's going to prepare it, and then you take this and go in and get the birthright. And of course, Jacob says, well, Esau's a hairy man, I'm a smooth man, he's going to know that I am a deceiver. And so she takes the hair of a kid and puts it on his hands and on his neck, and takes Esau's best clothes that would have his personal aroma on it. And Isaac is blind and not able to see. And in this encounter, Jacob is going to lie four different times. Verse 19. When Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. That's two lies right there. Get up and please sit and eat my game that you may bless me. And Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have it so quickly, my son? And he said, because the Lord your God caused it to happen to me. So now he lies and invokes the favor of God. I remember, you think about how brazen this is. I remember a woman came forward and confessed that she had an affair. And as people are saying, we're so thankful that you came forward and had this, you know, you repented of this affair. She said, oh, this was a long time ago. And well, I knew for a fact from her son that she was lying. It had happened the last week. And so here's a person that comes forward and is supposed to make their life right, and they lie about it. Jacob is a liar. And again, Isaac asks him, are you sure you are Esau? And he says, yes, I am. So he lies to his father four times. In verse 27, you have, and following, you have Isaac giving the blessing to Jacob. Now, verse 28, now may God give you the dew of the earth, of the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and an abundance of grain and new wine, and may people serve you and nations bow down to you and be master of your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be those who curse you, and blessed be those who bless you. You see, Esau was not fit to be the heir of the spiritual promise. And God had foreseen that. He had predicted that when they were in the womb. And really all that Jacob had to do was wait on God's timing. But because of his selfishness and Rebekah's selfishness and favoritism, they acted presumptuously. And there's going to be severe consequences to this. I mean, he's going to have to suffer some consequences. God can use the wrong decisions of people to bring about his greater good, but there are consequences to those wrong decisions. And so what happens is that Esau hates Jacob and plots to kill him after Isaac's death. And so Rebekah tells him that he must leave. A good point here is home is the laboratory of life. What we say and do to our children and with our children has consequences. Our homes bequeath our children with ingrained memories and habits, either bad or good. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 7, the memory of the righteous is blessed. The name of the wicked will rot. And I've been asked to participate in funeral services for a dearly departed one. And the family, the service will stretch out to an hour and a half because different ones in the family want to get up and they want to say something and they want to share their memories and they want people to know how wonderful their father or their mother or whoever they're talking about in their family is. And I've been to and I've conducted funerals where the service might be, I think the shortest one is like 10 minutes. Because family, well, we just don't really have much to say. The Bible tells us in Proverbs 23 and verse 3, by wisdom a house is established, and by understanding it is established. And in Psalm 27 and verse 1, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain that build it. Someone said, no success in life can compensate for a failure at home. Because in the home life is where we live out our faith and our Christianity before our children. And so what kind of memories are we making with our children? Well, Jacob's discipline. He goes to Uncle Laban's reform school. And this is God's way of developing his character. In Genesis chapter 28, as he is going to flee from Esau's wrath, and Rebekah says that when his anger subsides, I'll call for you and you can come back home. And in Genesis chapter 28 and verse 12, and Jacob had a dream, and behold, a ladder was set on the earth with its top reaching to the heaven, and behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And this is the idea of communication between heaven and earth is directed toward who? Jacob. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac, and the land on which you lie, I will give it to you and to your descendants. And your descendants shall also be like dust of the earth, and you shall spread out to the rest, out to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in you and in your descendants shall all the families of the earth, that's us, be blessed. And behold, I am with you, and I will keep you wherever you go and bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I promised to you. So God says, I have a special place for you in my plan. Verse 16, and Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place and I did not know it. Jacob, who thought about himself and thought about his physical circumstances, said, behind the veil of this physical reality is a far greater reality, God. And his spiritual potential, his spiritual capacity, his spiritual faith is developing. That God says he's going to be with me. And so notice he makes a deal with God. And he was afraid and he says, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. And in verse 20, and Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me on this journey that I take and will give me food to eat and garments to wear and return to my father's house in safety, then the Lord will be my God. He is stepping out in these baby steps of faith. God, if you do this, see, he's driving a bargain with God, the art of the deal. If you do this for me, God, then you will be my God. And God is going to refine and discipline his character. Well, he goes to Jacob goes to Laban's reformatory school there in Genesis chapter 29. And we have to hurriedly go over the story, but he sees Rachel, and Rachel is a knockout. He falls in love, head over heels, love at first sight when he sees Rachel. And then in Genesis chapter 29, verse 15, he meets Laban, and Laban says to him, what shall your wages be? And it says that Laban had two daughters. Leah had these weak eyes. She was not attractive. But Rachel was beautiful in form and face. Verse 18, Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to you than to give her to another man. Stay with me. Verse 19, notice Laban never said, okay, you serve 7 years, you get Rachel. He never technically said that. Verse 20, so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him... Okay, guys, this is always a good verse to put in an anniversary card or Valentine's Day card. They seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. Oh, how romantic that is. Laban said, trust me, and I'll give you what's right. And what happens After the 7 years, verse 23, Jacob wants his wife. In verse 25, now it came about in the morning, this is after the wedding feast and the wedding where they come together. Verse 25, it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. You know, I kind of wish they had the Bible's funniest home videos. And I wish that when he first saw in the light of morning, it's not Rachel. You know? And it's very emphatic in the Hebrew. It was Leah. What is this that he goes to Laban? What is this that you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I've served with you? Why then have you deceived me? Oh, see, the deceiver doesn't like to be deceived. He got a taste of his own medicine. You see, God is teaching him, yeah, what goes around comes around. You reap as you sow. But Laban said, it is not the practice in our place to marry off the younger before the firstborn. Sorry, it's against company policy. You didn't read the fine print. And so he says, okay, complete this week, and then I'll give you Rachel, and then you work 7 more years. And then he would have his lovely wife, Rachel. And then what happens after this is that Jacob then worked 6 more difficult years with integrity for building up a livestock herd from Laban. And what was he learning in all this time? Jacob's character, who was selfish and manipulative, was learning integrity. In Genesis chapter 31, I want to read verse 38. These 20 years, 14 for his two wives, the 6 for the flocks, I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten the rams of your flocks. He didn't sneak or steal anything. That which was torn of the beast, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. You required it of my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. You see, Laban drove a hard bargain. Thus I was by day, the heat consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house, and I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. Remember, Jacob was a domestic guy. He liked to hang out in the tents with his mama. He had to learn. He had to change. He had to learn to be a shepherd. He had to learn to adapt. God was changing and disciplining his character. And so, in all of this, in Genesis 31, why God told him to go back to face Esau is in verse 31. The Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. His time is done there with Laban, that God has refined and developed and disciplined his character. He's learned in dealing with a selfish manipulator, that he can't out-trick him, he cannot out-con him, and so he has to learn character and he has to learn to trust in God. Well, let's see, that's an extra slide. What do we see in this? That God is for us. At the outer edge of human experience, God is for us. Psalm 73, verse 25, whom do I have in heaven but you? And having you, I desire nothing else on the earth. Even though my heart and my flesh may fail, you are my God. If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things? Jacob realized that he could not depend on himself to out-trick or out-smart Laban, so he had to learn to trust in God. I had a friend in Indiana email me this past week and said, Frank, I've lost my job. He's a man, he's in his late 50s. And he says, I know God has a plan for me, I just don't know what it is right now. See, by faith, I know that God is for me, and I know that God can take care of me. And Jacob learned that by faith. Well, now Jacob's going to have to confront Esau. He's got to go back and face the deeds that he has done and his mistreatment of Esau. Jacob leaves Laban to return home to Canaan, Genesis 32-33. And then in Genesis 32, verse 6, he sends word to Esau that he's coming back and asks that he can find favor in his sight. And he wanted to give him this livestock as a gift, verse 5. Verse 6, the messengers returned to Jacob saying, we came from your brother Esau, and furthermore, he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. Didn't say, hey, looking forward to seeing you. He brings a militia with him. Now, when Abraham went to rescue Lot from these kings that had kidnapped him, he took 318 men. A battalion is 300 to 1,000 men. Esau has a small battalion to greet him. And he said that he wants to kill him. Have you ever had anybody that wanted to kill you? When I sold books for Southwestern Company, I was door to door. There were dictionaries and Bible reference books. And this guy, he said he wanted it for his kids. And I said, well, we need a deposit. And he said, well, I don't have any money, but I'll be sure to take the books when you deliver them end of the summer. I said, are you sure? Because I don't want to order them and come here and you not get them. So are you sure? Oh, sure. End of the summer, I come to deliver them. His wife says, oh, he's not here. Come back later. Come back the second time. His son is at the door. His son's about 13. And I said, got these books here that your dad ordered. My dad says he doesn't want the books. Just can I come in and talk to him? I'd like to talk to him. And so he goes back and he says, my dad doesn't want to talk to you. Oh, well, let me just go in and talk to him, okay? And just, bad mistake. So the little boy lets me in the house. The dad is sitting on a couch in the den, sees me, gets angry, jumps up. There's a kitchen counter there next to the den. On the kitchen counter is a large knife. It's about this long. Now, I showed Debbie a knife. One of her knives this long. She says, don't bring that to church, okay? So imagine that this is a knife. He grabs it and he starts running toward me saying, get out of my house. And I thought, that is an excellent idea. And I turned around and ran out of the house. Okay. Esau wants to kill Jacob, and he's going to have to face him. Because God, and I didn't realize this, God told him to go back. He was obeying God, is what he was doing. And in verse 7, Jacob was greatly afraid, and he was distressed. And so he had a plan. He was going to divide up his family and livestock so if Esau attacked one, the others might escape. So he's very much afraid to face Jacob, to face Esau. And so he panics and he prays. And look at his prayer, verse 9. Jacob said, oh God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, oh Lord, he said to me, return to your country and to your relatives and I will prosper you. I'm doing what you said, God. I am unworthy of all the loving kindness and of all the faithfulness which you have shown to your servant. Notice how humble and grateful he is. For my staff only I crossed this Jordan, now I have become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, and he will come and attack me, and the mothers with the children. Notice he's not just concerned about himself. He is now concerned about Leah, too, that once he didn't love. Verse 13, he selects some gifts to send ahead, livestock to Esau. And then what happens is he wrestles with an angel. Verse 24, then Jacob was left alone with a man. Hosea says it was an angel. And wrestled with him until daybreak. And when he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh so that the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. And then he said, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. Why in the world would Jacob want to wrestle an angel? Why would anybody want to wrestle an angel? But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Jacob was desperate. I'm a dead man unless you help me. And so, verse 28. He said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob. You see, he has a new identity now. He's changed. But Israel, you have struggled with God, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. And that didn't mean he manipulated God. It means he learned to surrender to God. He learned to totally depend on God. I cannot handle this alone. I need your help. You know, a lot of times people can fake change. He was a changed man here. Butch Davis told me about in Birmingham, Alabama, there was a court where a woman came before the judge. She had been charged with a crime and convicted of a crime and was going to be sentenced. And she showed up before the judge. She had a Bible in one hand and she had a baby in the other hand. And wanted leniency and told the judge that I'm a changed woman. I got saved and I want to be able to take care of my baby. The judge administered justice. The woman got angry. She threw the Bible at the judge. And the marshals restrained her. And there was a woman in the courtroom says, hey, judge, can I have my baby back? So it was all a ruse to pretend that I've changed. Jacob was a changed man by completely surrendering to God. So he goes to, I want you to notice, see this scene here in Genesis chapter 33, and Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming and 400 men with him. And so he divided the company he had with him. And in verse 3, look at this. He himself passed on ahead of them. He's all by himself with God and bowed down to the ground 7 times. So here he is. Remember, he had a limp, and all by himself in front of these 400 men, he just comes by himself and he bows down. Humble and penitent. And in verse 4, Esau ran to meet him. I think Esau very well may have had a change of mind. I think he maybe brought 400 men because he was going to kill him, but he changed his mind. He had a change of heart. And so they reconciled. He embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And so they have reconciliation. After their reconciliation, Jacob goes to Shechem in Bethel and builds an altar. And I want you to read here in Genesis chapter 33. I think it's a great verse here. Verse 18. Now Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem. Shechem, this is in central Canaan, which is in the land of Canaan. When he came from Padan Aram and camped before the city. In verse 20. And he erected there an altar and he called it El Elohi Israel. And I want you to notice that name. There are 3 mentions of God in this name, in this altar. El is God, means the strong one. Elohi, he is God. Israel is the one who struggles with God. What did he call this altar? The God of the one who struggles with God. He made God his very own God. Life is a journey of faith away from self to God. And in the end, the only thing that matters is what am I going to do with God in my relationship with God. God made us for himself, as Augustine said in his Confessions, and we are restless until we find our rest in you. And so we have victory through self-surrender to God. Paul said, I count all things lost for the excellence of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish that I may gain Christ. Every day I have to decide, am I going to live for God or self? That's what it boils down to. Live for self, like Jacob started out and Esau did, it will lead to alienation from God and failure in life. But if I turn from self to God and live by faith, that will lead to glory and to God's eternal blessings. So when I come to the end of myself, I discover the beginning of the power of the eternal God. And Jacob learned how to completely trust God's overwhelming grace through life's ups and downs. In Genesis 48, at the end of his life, when he's 147 years old, and he blesses Ephraim and Manasseh, he says that God has been the God and shepherd
all the days of my life. Even when I didn't realize it, God was there. And God had a plan. And He was arranging circumstances so I could learn to make the right choices and make God my very own God. We've all heard the story of footprints where a person died and they met the Lord and they said, "Lord, you know, I once had a dream where there were two sets of footprints that we were walking together on the seashore. And then at one point, there was only one set of footprints. And Lord, why did you leave me at that time?" And the story is, that was the time when I carried you. Jacob learned that God could do for him what he could not do for himself. And that is what faith is all about. Paul said, "This is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptance, that Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, among whom I am chief. Yet for this reason I obtained mercy, that in me first Jesus Christ might show all longsuffering as a pattern to those who are going to believe on Him for everlasting life." There's a great story called "The Meanest Man in Texas." And in 1929, he was arrested and convicted, put in jail for killing two men when he was 19 years old. While in jail, he was on death row. He had his execution commuted by the governor. Then, after he had commuted to life imprisonment, he killed six men in jail. During this time, then the prison chaplain said, "Here's a man who doesn't have a soul." During this time, he heard a preacher in the Church of Christ from Dallas, Texas, preach the gospel that God loves everyone and God can save anyone, and that includes you. And he wanted to have a Bible study. In fact, this man, his dad was a preacher, and that faith had never taken root. And then he comes at the very outer edge of human existence where he has no one to turn to. And he says, "I need to find God." And he was baptized. He was released in 1955, and he began to have a prison ministry where he had Bible studies and converted people. He was called, in this book, called "The Meanest Man in Texas," chronicles his life story. Jacob shows it's not how we begin in life, but how we end up that matters in this journey of faith to God. Are we looking for a city? That's a journey of faith.